Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Welcome to Weekend Warriors. It's the foreign affairs podcast that asks, what else is happening in the world? I'm Essie Cupp. Now, if you've been paying attention to any foreign policy this week, and I know that's a big ask because there's some pretty important stuff happening domestically over in Washington. But if you've been paying any attention, you may have seen the bombshell investigation by The Washington Post, which found that top U.S. officials have been misleading the public about the Afghanistan war since the earliest days of the conflict. That's according to thousands of pages of confidential documents obtained by the paper. This broke just as the Trump administration has been trying to iron out a peace deal with the Taliban. I know it sounds like a familiar story, the government lying to us about a war, but the Afghanistan war was long touted as the good war, in contrast to the war in Iraq, which was, as we now know, entered under misleading pretenses by the Bush administration. Now, both President Obama, President Trump have tried to extract us from Afghanistan in different capacities. Our focus on Iraq, though, has understandably waned over the past few years. Meanwhile, you might not know it, but violence and protests have been flaring up in Iraq. Just a week ago there, at least 12 civilians were massacred after dozens of gunmen stormed a protest in central Baghdad. Since October 1st, Iraqis have been protesting unemployment, government corruption, the lack of basic services. It's all been leading to a government crackdown and calls for government leaders to step down. 432 people have been killed in that time frame, and the prime minister finally agreed to step down and nominate a new leader. Iraq is teetering on the edge of failed state status following open-ended American military intervention that led to hundreds of thousands of military and civilian deaths. So is Iraq our problem anymore? Well, an unstable actor in that region in particular is dangerous to the rest of the world, including us, as we know all too well. So perhaps we should be more concerned with what's happening in Iraq, in addition to Yemen and Syria and other failing states. So if that's the case, if we should be paying more attention, well, what can or should be done? What are the costs? Well, my guest today is Dan Gabriel, former CIA counterterrorism officer who completed 6 tours in Iraq and Afghanistan. He's also the director and executive producer of this year's documentary film Mosul, which followed Iraqi forces during 2016's 100,000-strong offensive to liberate Iraq's second-largest city from ISIS. Dan, welcome.
Great to be here, Essie. And that's a really, really succinct overview of really what's happened in the region in the last 60 days. I think you can't talk about Iraq and Iran separately anymore, and to that extent, perhaps even Afghanistan. So what I believe we're seeing is really the remaking of the modern Middle East, almost the follow-on, if you will, to the Arab Spring, that I do believe is going to be more significant and more tumultuous than what we saw, what was it, 7 or 8 years back.
Wow. Well, I want to talk more about Iraq in your film, but before we get into that, as someone who also served in Afghanistan, I want to get your take on this investigation about the Afghanistan war that came out this week, how so many government officials now spanning 3 separate administrations misled the public and manipulated the data. Just your take on that.
This is the biggest secret that never was. Everything, of course, in the report to the Washington Post, just unbelievable reporting and almost surprising that it hasn't been done before. But these are the conversations that you would have with people in the know, people that I serve with, people above my pay grade, people in the diplomatic corps, generals, aid workers. this is common knowledge that this is what was happening. And I think, you know, the disconnect is that the talking points that their public affairs people would give them before they would go on the shows to talk about such things as Afghanistan and the Taliban just were so liberal, if you will, in terms of the truth, that they just really became detached from reality. But none of that, none of what you read in the Washington Post report this week, which I absolutely encourage everybody to read, it's must read reporting. None of that is a surprise to anybody that's there. And of course, wow. It puts a lot of pressure on generals and our leadership, including General Petraeus. That really doesn't paint him in a great light, or Khalil Zadar, or any of these other guys, including the National Command Authority, the presidents. Of course, Obama, you know, he was president for 8 years of the turmoil in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Bush for, what, I guess, 6, and Trump going on 3.5 now. So, you know, they're all involved in it.
Well, thank you for that. I appreciate that insight. And let's shift now to Iraq. What made you first want to make a movie about Mosul?
Well, look, I was in Mosul in 2004, 2005, with the CIA. Now, of course, back then it was a very different place. It was actually not even the worst place in Iraq at that time, if you can believe it. Really, the focus was in the Sunni-held areas like Fallujah and Ramadi. We saw a lot of bloodshed happening in those early years there. But what essentially happened is Mosul became the center of the Sunni awakening and the U.S. effort to, you know, to basically engage the tribes, the Sunni tribes, and to get them to take part in government. Of course, President Obama failed to negotiate the status of forces agreement. He left as precipitously as we entered, if you would, and boom, you've got a power vacuum that ISIS just was more than eager to fill, and that's exactly what they did. So ISIS, of course, being basically second-generation al-Qaeda in Iraq, if you will. Mm-hmm. When I was there, we were looking at Zarqawi and, of course, looking at him until he was dead at the bottom of a ditch under the house that they dropped the JDAM on. But really, the ISIS ideology grew out really even the more extreme version of al-Qaeda, Salafist, Wahhabist ideology that Zarqawi put forward, which was very brutal, very graphic and visual in nature in terms of willing to really use shock, you know, the shocking video images to bring about fear in the population. And so, ISIS perfected it.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. I mean, ISIS is nothing if not predictable. They go where those power vacuums are. It's why people like me were worried about Syria, you know, 8 years ago, and why we're worried about Yemen, and why we were worried about Libya. They are pretty predictable in terms of their strategies. So how potent of a threat is ISIS there now? We hear a lot more about it, you know, in Syria.
Okay, so let's start with what remains. It's it is still a threat. You know, as a military organization, as a political entity, it's been defeated. I think we can say that President Trump brought down the curtain on the organization with the fall of Mosul, the follow-on the follow-on actions in Syria, and of course the killing of Baghdadi. But we need to be genuine about with each other is that the ideology remains just as potent. Mm. And the sectarian divisions are what allows the ideology to have such appeal. And ultimately, that's why Mosul is really not about ISIS. It's not about Islamic extremism. It's about the circumstances on the ground, the sectarian mistrust between these groups that allow that to grow.
So this is the question a lot of people, you know, hand-wring over. What responsibility do we have when we go into a place and then leave it, you know, without wanting to nation build, right? We all know the dangers of nation building, but without setting up this kind of vacuum, what, in your mind, what is that balance for us?
Well, I think most of the movie is actually it's interesting because it parallels Operation Inherent Resolve. So Operation Inherent Resolve was what the Obama administration put together when they decided that ISIS was, in fact, no longer a JV team, and they were going to get serious about a military response to that.
Yeah.
But OIR, as they called it in short, was designed to put an Iraqi face on the problem and across the border, a Syrian face, too, if you will. But again, not to have U.S. forces out front leading the mission. It was always intended that the U.S. forces would be there to train, to equip, to provide the air power. So when we made the film Mosul, that's what we did. There's actually no Americans in the film. This is a film about Iraqis fighting for their country, Iraqis, the different groups that make up their society, coming together to fight ISIS. Done a couple film screenings. Veterans have said, well, why was there no representation of U.S. forces there? And really with that explanation, they said, okay, I got it. Mm. So it's really instructive in the sense it's actually a playbook and a successful military operation and strategy that straddled both the Obama and Trump administrations that shows us how we can deal with these types of threats in that region without having 200,000 ground troops there.
Well, when you say, different actors coming together, I mean, that's really an understatement, as your film depicts. Opposition to ISIS led to this really remarkable, rare alliance between Sunnis and Shiites and Christians and Kurds. And, at one point you follow a female Sunni commander in a Shia military. So my question to you is, as remarkable as that alliance is, does that stay together when and if the threat of ISIS is completely neutralized somewhere, or does that unity dissolve?
Essie, it goes back to that old adage, there are no permanent alliances, there are only permanent interests. And I think really the question of Mosul and what it really focuses on, what comes next?
Yeah.
Because there's a hopeful element that does show the Sunnis and the Shia work together, the Yazidis and the Kurds and the Christians, all these different forces of varying level of capability, some highly trained, U.S. Special Forces trained, Iraqi Golden Brigade counterterrorist units, and then the militias like the housewife, the widow that we're talking about, Omar Adi, who's a Sunni, and she's on the Iranian table. She says that she turns to her colleague in the kitchen while she's cooking the chicken stew that she's about to feed to her troops. She leads a militia of several hundred men, and she's talking about, we didn't get paid this week. And, of course, she means paid by the Iranians. Mm-hmm. So, all of these uneasy allies come together, these states, the strange bedfellows. But really the question that we're left with is, are the seeds of the next conflict already there? And I think, it's been a mixed bag since then. Of course, the film ended in July 2017. But what's happened in the region is really kept the theme of the film and the interest in the story very much alive, especially with what's happened to, as you alluded to, in the last 2 to 3 months.
Well, talk about that for me, because I imagine you've been following that pretty closely. So talk about the protest. What's happening in Iraq right now? What's at the root of all this?
Well, I think as you accurately summarize, I mean, what's interesting again here is that in this case we see Shia in Iraq protesting Iranian influence. Mm-hmm. One thing we can look back to the Bush administration's decision to invade Iraq. There's one clear win in the region, indisputable. Iran, their influence has grown tenfold over since the time we invaded, to the point where they're well ensconced in the government in Baghdad and in different regions within Iraq, within Syria, within Lebanon, so they're even within Yemen. So their power has really grown. Of course, this is destabilizing and concerning to Saudi Arabia. But again, at the end of the day, what's unusual, or perhaps not quite understood by the U.S. General population, if you will, is the extent to which Shia within Iraq are resisting that influence and taking the streets to protest. And most of the protesters that you've seen so far that have been killed, unfortunately, have been on the south in Karbala and Basra, and they're Shia. So, what becomes of that is still remain. You may see a Shia kind of non-sectarian militia leader like Muqtada al-Sadr rise from the ashes and play some type of kingmaker role. A respected Shia militia, warlord guy, but he's not an Iranian. So that could be the direction we're heading. And, of course, the Sunni-Shia divide is also just on the surface and remains a consideration.
As always. I wonder if you would you categorize what's happening now, the protests in Iraq right now, would you categorize that as part of a sort of Arab Spring, or is it something unique unto itself?
I think it's an evolution from the Arab Spring. I think it's really that part of the world just kind of going through these aftershocks of really everything that's happened since 9/11. You could go back as far as the Iran-Iraq war and say that everything kind of started then, and then you had the shock wave of the Persian Gulf War, and then 9/11, and then the Iraq war, then the Arab Spring. So these are kind of the fault lines that I think are kind of reshaping the continents over there. And what comes of it, of course, we have to even talk about Lebanon. I mean, even Lebanon has had the same sorts of protests where they're pushing back against the Iranian influence. I think the bigger question is, how it's not necessarily how the U.S. is going to respond. It's how the mullahs in Tehran are going to respond, because I think they're not used to being in this position, you know, and they're used to flipping the switch off on the internet and being able to control the population. But we get to, you know, there's 800, 900 protesters dead this week from one count. That's a different battle.
Well, this is a question I have to confront every week doing this podcast, a podcast about foreign affairs, which is trying to impress upon, you know, U.S. listeners why any of this matters when we've all got our own problems, right, that are in our backyard. We've got domestic issues and policies that we're all debating. We've got a presidential election coming up. You know, whether it's making the case about Syria or Brexit, why all this matters is something I have to do every week. Make the case for U.S. listeners, U.S. audiences, why what's happening in Iraq right now matters to them.
Well, I think exactly that sentiment is really underestimated in how significant it was in propelling Donald Trump to office. Mm-hmm. That kind of America first, bring the troops home, mm-hmm. let's look inward. And I think you see these instincts, you know, the tweets or the off the cuff comments or decisions, proclamations, phone calls that he kind of puts out there that have that really look inward, America first, draw to it. But then to one extent or another, either the special interests in D.C. or his staff or foreign policy establishment or his generals kind of rein it in. And we saw that with what he, you know, basically pulled the rug on the Kurds mm-hmm. a month and a half, 2 months ago. And then to have the troops come out and then the troops are going back in to protect the oil fields. So, you know, I think it's interesting as much as anything else on the power of the American presidency and really how much, you know, the establishment can kind of keep things on track, even though it seems to be spinning off. Mm-hmm. But it is an important part of the world. And I think at the end of the day, President Trump simply doesn't want to make the mistake that others before have made and underestimate the power of, you know, Islamic violent extremism to rip the region, to cause a migration crisis that destabilizes right. Europe. I think it's going to require a constant reminding and counseling on the part of, you know, the foreign policy, the people that are interested in all foreign policy in D.C., to really hold his focus to it, because I think there is that instinct to just say, good enough and let's leave. And right. nowhere is that more evident than Afghanistan.
Right.
I mean, who wants to have their son die in Afghanistan next week, you know, in John Kerry's words? Who wants to be the last person to die for a stake or whatever the quote was? Yeah. I mean, with the amount of blood and treasure that it's been spilt there, and to see kind of the status quo, it raises important questions.
Yeah, and I think whatever your feelings and fatigue of these wars, which is understandable, you have to understand also that there are economic and national security implications in all of these theaters. And so it's important that we pay attention to them. And I'm real grateful for Dan Gabriel for you coming on. The film is Muzzle, and it's available on streaming platforms now. Go watch it. Really, really impactful behind-the-scenes look at the conflict there. Thanks, Dan Gabriel.
Merci so much. Appreciate it.
And thank you for listening to Weekend Warriors. I'm SC Cup. Tune in next time.
When you work next level. When you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.